Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
This is What's Next, and today we welcome back Andrew Del Monte, Executive Director of Cooperation Buffalo. Andrew, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Back with us again, and he decided to bring a guest with him, and that is Tara Dumas of the Farmer Pirates Compost, which we're going to just call Farmer Pirates because I keep on stumbling all over it. Tara, thanks for being with us.
It's good to be here.
It's great to talk. I want to get into talking a little bit more about Farmer Pirates, but the interesting connection now is Farmer Pirates is a co-op, and
yes.
You went through the fellowship program at Cooperation Buffalo.
Yeah, we did.
And it helped you kind of clarify making this change from being, I guess, what, a privately owned business, a proprietorship or whatever the case may be, into becoming a co-op.
Yeah, it did. I mean, we were already heading in that direction anyways. Mm. We knew that's what we wanted to do. But along with myself came another worker owner of the business, Bill, who really didn't have much experience or knowledge of a cooperative. I think, you know, the way that we had always been working together was very cooperative. We were usually all owners of the business, really sharing in decision making and relying on each other. But this really helped to have Bill come and have this, you know, in-depth class that really taught about the background and the history of cooperatives and also some fundamentals in how a cooperative business runs.
So how many cooperatives have worked with Cooperation Buffalo to this point? Do we have a number?
We've supported, I think the number is 10
okay.
new cooperatives to get started in our region over the past 7 or 8 years.
Right.
Many of them are worker-owned cooperatives, which is what Farmer Pirates is. That's where the employees, where the workers own the business. But cooperatives take many forms, right? So you may be more familiar with consumer-owned cooperatives that are often grocery stores, like the Lexington Co-op Markets, right, or the East Aurora Food Co-op. There's also producer co-ops, which are usually in the agricultural sectors, like upstate
dairy
farms,
co-ops, yeah.
Yep, those sorts of things. And then also housing. Both Tara and I have experience in housing co-ops, which is where a group of people come together to own a building when maybe each of us individually couldn't have been property right. owners at that time in our lives. You know, so there's many different types, and we've certainly steered some folks in the direction of considering launch. And we've always got about a half a dozen projects kind of in the hopper, you know, teams that are in the early startup phase that we're coaching through business development and those
right.
sorts of things as well.
Let's maybe open this up then to kind of a conversation conceptually mm-hmm. about who might be interested in a co-op, becoming part of a co-op in some regard, whether it's going to be a worker owner situation or whatever. Maybe take us through that idea. Maybe both of you can add a little light to it because obviously, Andrew, you live and breathe this, and Tara, now, you know, you're living and breathing it too, but, you know, but you made a significant decision in your business though, to become a cooperative though.
Yeah.
What are you seeing in terms of benefits so far?
So, wow, there's lots of benefits.
Okay.
I guess as a business owner, when having a big group of people or more than one or two people all contributing to the success of the business it's really key. I mean, there's a saying we use that, you know, together, we know a lot. Alone, we don't know at all. So the more minds we can have working on a project right. together, it really just makes the whole business more vibrant, successful. So that's one thing. The other thing is that, you know, we really want to be a business that all of the workers who are contributing to making the business a success can reap any of the benefits as well. So there's like profit sharing. So okay. it's not just one business owner. If the business does well that year, all that profit goes into the coffers of the business owners. This way, the profits are shared amongst all of the worker owners based on the amount of time and energy they've put into the business. So we just really want to make sure that we're valuing the people doing the work to make the business a success. And that's really, those are the two big ones for us.
And what else do you hear from them, from others that are interested in finding out more? I mean, I suppose for some, turns into a dead end. For others, it opens up new doors and new possibilities.
Certainly, there's a lot of energy in industries specifically where workers are not treated so great, right? So think low-wage work, the care sector, food service, right? These workers are really looking for a chance to do better for themselves, whether it's by profit sharing or just by having a little bit more say over what days they can take off of work and what they have to wear at the office and things like that, you know? So there's a lot of benefits when the job becomes yours, you know, and the folks that are on the shop floor or on the, you know, on the restaurant floor can really observe what's going on and make quick pivots based on the knowledge that they have, being the ones doing the work. So I think there's a lot of just like non-monetary, but really like quality of life benefits that also folks are attracted to by this model, right? The amount of work it takes to run your own business is a lot. I mean, Tara and team are amazing people that are doing amazing work, and it's not for everyone. Some people do want to just clock in and clock out at their job, and that can be okay too, you know? But certainly the more people who have that like drive to, I want to try it my way.
Right, sure,
I have the skills in this industry.
Sure.
And let's do it together, because many hands make light work. I mean, that's often what we hear is like, those are the reasons why folks come to us. One other thing that I know, Tara, you said to me a while back that also was a benefit to this model was the ability to really be a mission-driven business, right? To have a environmental or climate justice goal at your business and be able to see that through.
Yeah.
Because you guys, you know, if that's what folks agree to on the team, that's what we're going to do.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How, it also sounds like it could be, the concept sounds simple, right? The goal, the mission, that's the simple part. Everybody gets involved, everybody benefits. But it sounds also like it could be a pretty complicated journey to get to that point. Why don't you first give us kind of an outline, Andrew? Maybe, Tara, you can also fill in some of the blanks of what you found as you went through all this.
That, to me, that's where Cooperation Buffalo comes in. I mean, I see ourselves as being a shared resource to the cooperatives in Western New York. So if there are gaps, if there are things that we need more training on, we need more support in, those are the things we should be investing in as an organization so that we can support these cooperative businesses. And yeah, a lot of that nitty gritty, how this actually happens in practice, is where we come in and offer some suggestions, hopefully good suggestions, and some examples of how other folks do it, right? So learning about democratic decision making, how you run an effective meeting with 10 people who all at the end of the day have a vote, you know, you got to be really structured in those ways, because if you're unstructured, it gets messy real fast. And I've been a part of those meetings, I'm sure you have too.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, if there isn't a facilitator, this is going off the rails really fast, you know? So we come in with a lot of foundational training and those sorts of skills, and also some best practices for folks around governance at the business. So what decisions get made by what parties, right? What things do the worker owners all collectively decide on? What things do you sort of delegate to managers or people in key roles? If you have a board of directors at your business, what powers they have? That also helps the business to run efficiently enough that it could compete with the non-co-op businesses out there. Because if everyone's getting together to spend 5 hours in a meeting every day deciding what color the business cards are going to be, you're not going anywhere fast, right?
So now, don't talk about our organization that way.
You've got to have some really creative and clear structures.
So then when you say clear, though, so bylaws are installed, right?
Yeah,
they have to be.
Yeah, that was the first thing that we worked on during our transition to a worker cooperative, was creating like an operating agreement that encompassed, you know, a lot of these overarching like procedures of how we were going to operate right. as a cooperative. And it wasn't the most fun thing to do, but I think it really helped. I mean, Cooperation Buffalo helped us every step of the way to create this document. And, you know, it outlines things like what are the steps when somebody wants to become a new worker owner, making sure that was very clear. What is profit sharing going to look like in this cooperative? We can have that look many different ways. What were meetings going to look like? Making sure we're making it clear that, you know, each member has one vote. So just a lot of the core principles of a worker cooperative
right.
in the operating agreement.
So, I mean, I'm intrigued by the, because you both have brought up meetings, 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 meetings. We know all about meetings, don't we? Everybody out there who's in the workplace these days could appreciate that for sure. So you give constructive concepts about that? I mean, how it seems to me in this particular case, you even have to be more structured when it comes to how you run meetings and who gets involved. Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolute double underline exclamation point. Yeah. Structure is key, right? It's and these are skills that it might be a little unnatural to pick up for folks. Like, oh, I've sat in a meeting
sure.
before. I know how to talk about what I want to say. But the structure serves some key purposes. One, it makes sure you can get out of the meeting on time and go do the rest of your work mm-hmm. that you have to do or the rest of your life, right? It helps to make sure that everyone at the table can be heard, even though you do tend to have some people who like talking a lot, maybe right. some people who are slower to process and don't speak up as naturally. And it'll also make sure that folks have the information they need ahead of time and in the meeting so they can make good decisions, right? If you just spring agenda items on the table when folks get together for the first time, no one's had time to think about that idea. So right. so the little things that will encourage little that add up to something big is having an agenda ahead of time, naming a facilitator, sometimes having a separate person who's your timekeeper, a separate person take notes at the meeting, rotate those roles so you don't have one person who's like the chief of all the meetings all the time.
Sure.
Right? we do a lot of this with an eye toward instilling some anti-oppressive practices into the meetings, making sure that we're paying attention to whose voices are being heard. Is it all the men? Is it all the white people? You know, why is that if that's happening? And
right.
can we break that down a little bit and make sure we're hearing from everybody? And you know, through practicing that over time, our hope is that co-ops get a little bit better at bringing the best ideas forward, having efficient enough meetings that they can do the work that they actually want to do together and not just be sitting around a table all the time.
Right. Yeah. I can certainly appreciate that. And I'm also, both of you can chime in on this concept, but I've been to enough meetings where lots of discussion going on, lots of analysis of the situation, yet waiting for somebody to step up and really say the hard truth that nobody wants to offend somebody, right? I certainly can appreciate that sentiment. But now, if you're in a co-op and everybody's part of the ownership team, that's got to get out there. How do you get that out there? How do you get those, I mean, what might seem like mundane complaints from the outside, but maybe are key to making sure your business runs correctly. Can you empathize with that concept?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that maybe something that's a little bit different about a worker cooperative is that we are all working so closely together
right.
towards the same goal all the time. And so we're really comfortable sharing with each other the complaints that maybe we have or the things that we want to see improving. It's just a very open atmosphere. And often, you know, if you have a complaint as a worker owner in a co-op, I mean, the business is yours. It's not like you're complaining, oh, the boss again, and I wish this would change and no one's listening to me and I don't have the power to do this.
And you don't have to worry about the boss, coming back at you.
Right? So it can be, you know, a very, you know, just open space to talk about these things.
Right.
And we do talk about at our meetings, let's be solution focused. So if you have a problem, something that you don't like, why don't you propose a solution and let's talk it through how we can change this. Sometimes there's financial constraints and we just can't do that right now. So, but yeah, the meetings tend to go flow really well for us. I mean, we are six owners right now, so sure. we're still pretty small. But yeah, we do find that it's very open. And one thing, there is still this kind of mindset to overcome, especially for people who aren't super familiar with working in worker cooperatives, is that you still have the mindset of wanting to just blame somebody else for something that right. is not going well.
Sure.
And so just continuing to talk amongst each other like, well, I mean, it's not, it's kind of hard to have just complain when it's your business. So, you know, that's a fun learning mm-hmm. process of how that works.
Do you see people learning that as they go, though? Just what you said, I can express what my attitudes are here at 4:30 in the morning when I'm by myself. It changes a little, softens a little bit when my coworkers come in. But I you go from being a complaint person to being a solution person. But, you know, I think human nature, it's easier said than done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially when the rest of the world operates a different way.
Right.
Right. So the thinking about the fellowship program that we run, which is a multi-week course where folks will kind of learn the basics of this, how to start a business, how to make decisions cooperatively. You know, this should set you up to succeed, right? You can't just take one course and assume you've got it.
Right.
You know, this is something you have to keep practicing and setting aside time at your cooperative to do group education, to remind yourselves why we're doing it this way, what's important about doing it this way, what some of these structures are that we have in place, and what's important about them. Because you go anywhere else and you're unlearning this in the rest of your day, right? You know, this sort of like everyday democracy aspect of being a part of a business like this is really special and unusual. You know, we're used to every 4 years democracy otherwise in our daily lives, right? And so this is a very different mindset. You see something, you do something about it. You know, you see a problem, you take ownership of it because you are a co-owner of this business. It's that ownership mindset, it's a culture shift, and it is something we do spend a lot of time coaching people on and reminding them you're going to have to coach yourself always to do this.
Sure. I can only presume that there's probably a lot of personal growth, I would think, being part of a cooperative, right? That just kind of what I'm talking about here. After 40 years of being told exactly what to do, all of a sudden I might be an owner, and I'm going to decide for myself. Maybe I really don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you experienced that a little bit? I mean, would you say? I mean, I know you've been, you know, the business kind of always had a solid kind of benevolent root to it, but I mean, have you seen that for yourself?
Oh, 100%, absolutely. And it goes way further back from times living in a cooperative housing situation. And I do remember, you know, one of the first moments during a meeting, and maybe I came in with an idea already, and then I was hearing from all, you know, my other cooperative members about this, and I felt my mind being shifting and my mind changing, and it just really opened up, like, the idea that I don't have to stick to one thing and I can learn through other people and it's okay to like change and grow and pivot. And so it's been happening now ever since then. And definitely in this business, I can find, oh, I have my way. I want it done this way, very narrow-minded. And then, oh, someone at a meeting brings it up. Well, we're not really liking this way. It's not working out. Okay. And you can step back and, you know, humble yourself a bit and realize that it's, you know, you don't always have the best solution to something.
And how about from your perspective then, Andrew? Obviously, you're touching a lot of different businesses along those lines. I mean, are you witnessing what I'm talking about there, that you're seeing people grow into these roles, and maybe some are meant for it better than others?
Right. I think that's true. And you know, I don't believe that cooperatives are for everyone in this moment, but I think in different moments in people's lives, there may be, you know, better opportunities for it as well, right? There's a lot of, you got to want this, you know, it's certainly a lot of work to be a small business owner, whether you're doing it cooperatively or not, so that you got to have that drive, but you do have to have that willingness to be proven wrong, or that willingness to have your idea be improved by somebody else. And so there is a certain like taking the ego out of it factor. Like, we're here for a purpose, you know, to whatever that purpose is at the business, right? And usually in a worker co-op, one of those foundational purposes, we want to provide good jobs for each other, you know,
right?
That's a core purpose. And so the decisions that you make as business owners should be in service of that, right? Not in service of I want my idea to win out, you know? And so that really is a mind shift for a lot of people. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you find out really fast if you're going to be able to like flow in that kind of environment. So much emphasis on trust building amongst the team. If you can't trust each other, you can't say the hard things to each other, you know, like, I don't think that idea is in the best interest of the business, and here's why. And you have to be able to hear that. And if you can't, it's not going to work, you know? So like the trust building, clarity as far as roles and responsibilities, and definitely also this attitude that like, we are going to come up with a better solution because we listen to each other than if we went it alone. Those are really key.
Yeah.
We're talking about co-ops today with Cooperation Buffalo, their executive director, Andrew Del Monte, with us. Also, Tara Dumas from Farmer Pirates, who is now a co-op. I'm interested also in this idea, as we're talking about, when we lay out co-op, I feel like I'm back in high school, kind of dreaming of utopias to a certain extent, right? And of course, now that high school is a long time ago, and some might say the current political atmosphere is anything but utopia. Some might say that. I'm just kind of curious if maybe you're finding a new interest in this concept now. If maybe more people to come find what you're all about. What are your thoughts there?
I'm curious to know, Tara, because you've done some hiring recently, if that also has sort of attracted people to the co-op model. But what I'll say first is anytime there's economic uncertainty, anytime people don't feel like their voice matters as much as it used to, there's always this like upswell of interest in alternative ways of doing things, right? And certainly being a part of a cooperative where it's one person, one vote, not $1, one vote. You can't buy your way to the top or to more influence the way obviously you see folks can in the broader economy, right? It's a real equalizer, and it's a real way to live into, I think, some core values that many, many people have, that like we want, you know, to put people first. And the reason we have an economy should be to do right by each other.
Sounds good.
Not just do right by the dollar. And I think what's cool about cooperatives, I say cool, but it's also transformational, is like this is a real practical way to practice that right now. It's not necessarily going to like replace the mainstream economic system overnight.
Apple's not going away.
But this is a way that folks can try out something different. And as the broader structures crumble, I'll use that word, having these examples of doing things in a better way that maybe is serving more people's needs is a really powerful thing, even if they're just examples, you know? So I think that's part of the attraction of co-ops in this moment.
So Andrew was saying that you've just hired some people. So perhaps do you sense that there's a taste for this? There's a hunger for this kind of this kind of cooperative approach to business. What do you sense, or are you just basically finding people like yourself who've always kind of been this way, and this is who you are, and now it's time to do this?
Well, I mean, I think maybe it's a little bit of both. There was two people we brought on in the last couple of years that, you know, I think already were sort of business minded, already were really into wanting to work cooperatively. I mean, we are a business that really focuses on doing good work for the whole. You know, we're diverting food scraps from landfills. It can be a really dirty job, but it's also a job that's like, it's honest work that we're doing. So that already brings in, I think, people who are kind of in that mindset. And then, most recently, I don't know that I got that vibe that, you know, there was like tons of applicants that want to work at a worker-owned cooperative. I also think it could be because our work is a little unique and it's a little dirty and things. So there's not a ton of people who maybe like are just super excited about working in that field.
But right. Okay. All right. That's interesting to hear it from that perspective. But in your sense, though, Andrew, you kind of expect, I mean, if you're seeing it already, maybe as we can maybe project moving forward, that this interest is only going to grow higher.
Since the 2008 recession, the worker co-op community across the U.S. has I believe, at least tripled in size. We've been doing a census every couple of years to sort of track this on the national level. I say we, the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives, which is a wonderful organization that it's kind of like the trade association for worker co-ops. And you know, it's a small but mighty sector of the economy, but tripling in size in that brief amount of time is quite notable. And it has coincided with certainly these vast swings of you know, economic instability that we've been seeing over the past 15 years or so.
We're going to talk, continue our conversation here on What's Next, talking about co-ops, cooperative businesses. With us, the Executive Director of Cooperation Buffalo, Andrew Del Monte. Also with us, Tara Dumas from Farmer Pirates. We'll talk more with them when we come back. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Whether you're here for the headlines, the harmonies, or the next great song, you're in the right place. We've brought all our stations together under one name, Buffalo Toronto Public Media, BTPM NPR, BTPM Classical, BTPM The Bridge, BTPM PBS. Unique voices, one connected home for public media. New name, same great content. Discover more at btpm.org.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media brings our community together with programs that inspire, inform, and entertain. Enjoy trusted news, local performances, educational resources, and cultural treasures all in one place. It's more than media. It's a connection to the world around you. Discover what Buffalo Toronto Public Media offers at btpm.org. This is public media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. We're talking about co-ops, cooperative businesses, with us Executive Director from Cooperation Buffalo, Andrew Del Monte, and Tara Dumas of Farmer Pirates Compost. I'll say the full name instead of shorthanding it. Andrew, of course, a return guest here on What's Next, but the first chance we've had to talk with Tara and about Farmer Pirates. And I said this during the break. I mean, I'm like starstruck to have you here with us, because when I first heard about your business, whenever many years ago, I was totally fascinated by the concept. So let's talk about Farmer Pirates. What is Farmer Pirates?
So we're a small local business that is working really hard to keep food scraps out of the landfill and turn them into a really valuable resource, which is compost,
right,
a nutrient-rich fertilizer that can be used to revitalize and replenish soils all over our area to grow flowers, vegetables, you know, whatever it is you want, but really just like create this circular sort of system.
And you told me before we went on the air, last year, and you—I mean, though you're a growing business and you've expanded your base here, you're pretty small when it comes right down to it. And yet, you were able to collect 1.2 million,
1.4 million
pounds of food scraps last year, and turn them into compost.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just a drop in the bucket. If you think about, you know, how like that volume of food scraps that would otherwise just be going to sit into a landfill, it's mind boggling, really. We do know that food scraps make up the fourth largest item that enter, you know, municipal landfills. So keeping those food scraps out of the landfill really can have a major impact.
How did this all come about for you? I get the feeling this is a great story.
Yeah, I mean, so back in 2012, there was a group of us that got together and actually formed Farmer Pirates Cooperative.
Okay.
And we were just a group of people that were growing food in Buffalo or wanted to grow food. We were, you know, urban farmers or community gardeners, and we just wanted to kind of form a group where we could help each other out, buy seeds together, share knowledge, share tools, buy land together. So we did that. And the first thing that we, you know, really noticed was that, wow, the soil here in the city, it's pretty rough. We need compost. We need a natural fertilizer to revitalize these, you know, poor soils. And so we were trucking like composted horse manure or cow manure in from rural areas. And it was expensive and not super great. And, you know, at that time, there were other organizations around the country that were collecting food scraps and turning them into compost. And so we ran a small Kickstarter campaign to get this off the ground. Mm-hmm. And we started with about 20 customers that we, you know, we gave used buckets to collect their food scraps. We came by and picked them up. And then we started, you know, composting with pitchforks, you know, by hand. Just we got a connection with the Buffalo Equestrian Center. Mm. They had all this horse bedding that they were having trucked out of the city into a rural area. And so we said, will you bring it to us instead? Mm. We'll take it for free. You have to drive a lot less distance. We, you know, we'll process it right here. And so we started mixing the food scraps with the horse bedding by hand and using that compost on our farms and gardens at that time. And so obviously more than 10 years later, it's grown into a different thing. I'm no longer an urban farmer. And, you know, I'm not using, the sole purpose isn't anymore to create compost for myself. It's grown into something so much bigger than that.
And anybody who does a little bit of gardening and has gone and purchased mm-hmm. at a store, you know, compost.
Yeah.
Things that you buy, you know, you are making it, you're creating it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do then sell the compost that we produce back to the local like farming and gardening community. And we definitely have repeat and loyal customers. And we hear all sorts of great feedback on, wow, look what your compost has done for my garden. And it's incredible. And people, you know, love to know that it was all created with, you know, waste. I'm using quotes here.
Yeah, right. Well, it would be going into the garbage can or into a...
Yeah, and just going off to a landfill and, you know, wreaking havoc on our environment and taking up valuable space. But here instead, you know, we can just keep it and keep it cycling through to grow more food. It's...
1.4 million pounds, though. It's not something you can put in your backyard. where are you doing this?
We're in on the east side, is okay. Where we've always been, like in the Broadway Fillmore neighborhood.
Okay.
There's a big parcel of land that's at the end of some dead-end streets and then abuts the railroad.
Oh, I see.
It's a parcel of land that has never been developed before, so it's not where houses once were, where houses could be in the future. It's literally never been developed back there. And so it's really a beautiful, ideal location back there. And we lease it. And our landlords are amazing and have been so supportive of us over the last 13 years.
And so, like you said, you're not necessarily doing the hands-on work like you once were. But at the same time, I mean, you know, it must have been nitty gritty to start things off here a little bit, or were you ready for it? Because you're like you said, you're already doing a little urban farming.
Yeah. At the time, I mean, I was much younger, and I was also an urban farmer, so not shy at all to
like
hard
your hands
work,
dirty,
yeah, or getting dirty at all. But yeah, it's been a journey for sure. And now we have a machine that helps to, you know, to make the compost and mix it up. But it still can be the drivers go out there every day, and they're dealing with, you know, hundreds, thousands of buckets or totes of food scraps, and it can still be, it's a quite a dirty job.
Yeah, but an important one, because it helps to clean our environment and also makes for better gardens and such as well. And you guys have been involved with a pilot project with the city of Buffalo, which, again, one of these things that you've built up this kind of hero image for me about what you guys do. But, you know, this idea that, you know, you're going around to city residents and taking away their food scraps as well.
Yeah, it's so wonderful that, the program is called Scrap It, curbside.
Right.
And yeah, it's really wonderful to work with the city of Buffalo, and the money is coming from New York State at the moment. So I'm just so thankful that New York State is really paying attention to this issue mm-hmm. and seeing how important it is. And then, you know, we have some wonderful people at the city who are really excited and motivated by this project. And we put in a bid along with, few other companies to get this contract with the city. And I mean, we do have extensive experience doing this already. So we won the bid. And yeah, we've been successfully running the program for just about 2 years now, right. I think. And it's great that, you know, people can just it becomes a part of their life
right.
that they go, oh yeah, of course, food scraps, just put it out with my garbage every week. I mean, in other parts of the world, this is very commonplace. People will tell me, oh yeah, I came back from Italy or I'm Canada. I mean, they've been doing this for such a long time. It's of course, you would never throw your food scraps in the garbage. So it's great that Buffalo is where we're doing this.
Absolutely. How many residents are involved in the project right now in the city of Buffalo?
There's 2,000.
2,000. Okay. So there's room to literally grow here.
And we have a waiting list already. I mean, every day people are learning about it and signing up. So there's a wait list, but Buffalo did receive more money from the state to expand the program. We're just in contract signing phase. But after that, the program is definitely, it's set to grow and continue for the next 5 years.
I'm wondering if you can... you probably have had these kind of conversations about the cost benefit that we're looking at, because now you're an owner and a worker as well, because you're a co-op. But looking at the dollars and cents of it, I mean, it seems to me, obviously, it's a great idea. If everyone wants to make the environment a little bit better, mm-hmm. that's good. Great to get the food scraps out of the landfills. But I mean, are we really looking at like a dollars and cents thing where it's just finally in the end, if this was more widespread, that it would just be, in essence, maybe pay for itself, the lack of the use of landfills. And obviously, of course, having, more opportunities with fertilized materials that can be used to grow things. I mean, am I on the right case here, or am I missing part of the fact that, I mean, can this someday pay for itself, I guess is what I'm saying?
I think so. I mean, I think we're a little bit of a ways off, and that's always a hard conversation to have. It was when I was an urban farmer too, thinking about the cost of local produce versus mass produced, produce that's shipped in from far away. The costs aren't always like as upfront. There's a lot of hidden costs mm-hmm. of doing things the way that we do it that we really don't see or we don't acknowledge that come back later.
Okay.
So, on this small scale, could Buffalo afford to do this or justify doing this without grant money? Probably not. But I think as it grows and as the impact becomes larger and, we're seeing more the impact of, landfills are finite, right? So we only have so much space for landfills. I mean, we know that there's methane being emitted from landfills every time you put organic material in one through the anaerobic digestion. I mean, these are impacts that maybe we don't assign a dollar to at this point. But in other large cities, Seattle, San Francisco, places like that, this is a thing where they only have garbage pickup every 2 weeks.
Wow.
And food scraps are being picked up every week. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is something that we can strive to get to someday. And then the benefit, we were already recycling. The city is providing free recycling, and that's great. It's amazing. But here, composting, we're taking a waste stream and keeping it here locally and using the product created from it locally. When you're recycling, we're shipping it off somewhere else or doing something else with it somewhere else. So this is it's a pretty incredible process that I think it's inevitable. And so, yeah, financially, is it?
It's not there yet.
It's not there yet, I think, yeah, it has definitely the
potential. Tara and I were talking, Andrew, I saw you vigorously nodding your head in the affirmative, but as someone, obviously, your role with Cooperation Buffalo, you're always looking at business elements and I'm sure everything kind of sifts through your brain in that way. So you look at how they're doing their business. I mean, do you agree with Tara in the sense that, yeah, I could see this being a wider spread, very successful enterprise?
I mean, I look at it from two perspectives. One, there's the sort of like, what does this industry, what does this market look like on the broad scale? And composting is everywhere. There's lots of small pilot programs like this in other cities. There are more advanced programs that are municipally backed and funded. There are some as robust as what you were describing in Seattle, right? Where, you know, food scraps are actually picked up more often than the rest of your trash at this point, because so much of people's trash is food scraps.
Certainly.
Right? And so, yeah. Like, those things continue to pop up and grow. And so I think it's we can assume that there's going to continue to be interest for it here locally. And then just more on the like local market aspect, the fact that they have a wait list of city residents that want to participate in the Buffalo program, an ever expanding list of other small municipalities that are starting pilot programs. West Seneca is one. I think you've got one of the North Towns.
Hamburg. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like these are, yeah, it's, their business is growing pretty naturally just by sort of like folks saying like, oh, we want to do this. And that's how you test the market. You know, right. you do a small pilot, you see if people have interest and then, oh, we can grow this because there's interest. And, climate and environmental issues are horribly politicized these days. But as Tara was saying, like the bill for these things is coming due one way or another, mm-hmm. whether it's in the form right. of climate change or things that we will eventually have to drastically spend a lot of money on to fix. Right. And so I don't think we can look away from that inevitability aspect of it either.
We've got more to come here on What's Next. We're talking about cooperative businesses today. One of them is Farmer Pirates. And with us, Tara Dumas, also from Cooperation Buffalo, their executive director, Andrew Del Monte. We'll be back with more. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
The headlines don't stop. The world keeps moving. And through it all, you need news and information you can trust. That's where we come in. WBFO is now Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. Same station, same trusted journalism, just with a new name. From Morning Edition to All Things Considered, from Group Chat to Friday Night Lights, from What's Next to the BBC, we bring you the stories and smart conversations that matter. No spin. No nonsense, just the perfect mix of news, information, and entertainment. Listen anytime on the BTPM Listen app or btpm.org.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. We are talking about co-ops, cooperative businesses here in Buffalo, prospective people who might have an interest in it. As a matter of fact, we have two great guests to talk about that. One is deeply involved in it because her business, Farmer Pirates, is now a co-op, a worker-owned co-op, right, Tara?
Mm-hmm.
Tara Dumas with us, and also from Cooperation Buffalo, their executive director, Andrew Del Monte. So we've had a chance to kind of put some shine on Farmer Pirates here, which has been a pleasure for me. But what about some of the other businesses that maybe we should know about here who are also trying to create a better conditions for everybody involved by going through a cooperative effort? What about that, Andrew?
Well, yeah, I'll share some other local examples. Locally, we have, as I mentioned earlier, a little bit of like a coalescing around the food sector, right?
Sure.
So Farmer Pirates picks up food scraps and actually picks up from some of our other cooperative mm-hmm. businesses in our network. So we've got Bread Hive Worker Cooperative Bakery, which is worker-owned. We have the Healing Grounds Cafe, a co-op on Grant and Lafayette on the west side. We have Extra Extra Pizza and Wine Bar over in the Five Points neighborhood. Mm. They're a worker-owned tipless pizzeria. Their pizza is very good. and then, you know, we have co-ops in vastly different sectors too. We have a worker-owned co-op called Rose Jade Consulting that we've supported, which does nonprofit consulting facilitation for like strategic planning and things like that. They're folks that have like decades of experience in the nonprofit industry and are now, you know, operating a cooperative business to offer those services to other folks who are coming up behind them. And then more recently, we're working with a group of therapists and mental health counselors who are forming a MSO, a management services organization that's going to provide some kind of wraparound back-end support for all of their practices, right, to do things like scheduling and payroll and accounting and things like that. And they're going to own and operate that on a one worker, one vote kind of basis as a cooperative as well. So just a little bit of a sampling. This could be in any industry for
that's
sure.
That was going to be my next question. So I'm sure you think about it all the time. You say any business enterprise could be a co-op.
It's true. And we see this everywhere, right? There's an entire region in Spain called the Mondragon Cooperatives, which is a town called Arrasate, 20,000 people. Almost all of their local economy is worker-owned cooperative businesses. A lot of them in manufacturing and engineering, but they've got a cooperative university, a cooperative healthcare system, you know, just as like an extreme example, right? But then even here in the States, we have co-ops that range in industry and size and scale from, you know, a small, well, let's say a small composter like Farmer Pirates, which is 6 worker owners right now, Farmer Pirates Compost, all the way to there's 2,000 home care workers that own Cooperative Home Care Associates in the Bronx, which is a worker-owned direct like in-home home care service provider. There's also several thousand rideshare drivers in New York City. I think they're based in Manhattan, called the Drivers Cooperative, which is essentially a worker-owned version of Uber or Lyft.
Okay.
Right? In Chicago, there's a couple dozen workers. How old are all of us now? Over 10 years ago, took over a factory that was closing down and opened the New Era Windows Cooperative. President Obama stopped in to see them at one point. They essentially kind of occupied this closed factory and said, well, we still need our jobs. Can we keep making windows? And then they found a way to buy the factory from the old owner. And so that's in, you know, manufacturing, right? So there's such a variety.
I want to turn this around then, and I'll start with you, Tara, on this question. We'll move it back to Andrew. But, all right. So your business didn't start off as a co-op. You decided to become a co-op. I've got to believe, just from the time I'm spending with you, that you consider all perspectives, and I'm sure you're open to hear other people's perspectives. And there must be people who've said, don't do that. Don't. I mean, that's not going to work. Did you hear arguments like that? Were there people who were saying, no. You don't want to do all your hard work and share it. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't, I don't surround myself with a lot of people that might say that, but yeah, there was definitely a lot of, you know, funny looks like, oh, really? Like, you've started this business, so you're going to now share it with other people who didn't start it? And why would you do that? And yeah, a lot of questions people would have and a lot of funny looks. And
What were the questions? What were they asking?
I mean, just like how would that work? And how are you going to find those people? And you're going to trust those people with your business? Those questions I was saying about, you're going to share your, you know, success with other people who you hardly know.
Right. And it was your idea.
Right.
But you're going, You're giving up your intellectual property.
Sure. And you know, I have great, you know, I'm very passionate about, you know, kind of busting those myths and ideas and changing the way that we're thinking about economics and the way that we run our society in that way, and that I'm, you know, really intrinsically cooperative and I'm not in it just for me. So I can, you know, just come back with rebuttals to those things all day.
All right. So I have a feeling though, Andrew has to do that more often than you do. I can only imagine, I can only imagine what the, you know, going through these processes, you know, I can't even begin to imagine how few co-ops have really emerged from real life, you know, business associations that you've developed with people who probably thought the co-op was going to work for them and it just never materialized. So you probably are hearing from maybe bankers, maybe economists. I don't know. Who are you hearing from? Mm-hmm. Are the devil on the shoulder saying, nope, this doesn't work.
When our economy is built around a certain way of doing business, it makes it seem like anything else isn't going to work.
Right.
And a lot of that is just because the systems aren't in place for it, right? So you brought up bankers. I think that's a really good example. Most commercial banks are pretty wary of this business model because a commercial bank, when they offer a loan for a business, they're asking one person to sign on the dotted line and personally guarantee that money,
right?
When you've got a cooperative of 10 people, how do you decide which person is personally guaranteeing that money? So the structure of that lending product doesn't work, right? And so banks tend to be very wary of lending to co-ops. That's one of the main reasons why we're part of a national cooperative lender called Seed Commons that has a loan product specifically geared toward cooperative entities. So we don't ask for
individual people. So they understand going in. You don't have to go through a lot
Individual people don't have to sign away like a personal collateral in exchange for the loan.
Oh, okay.
Instead, it's the business collateral is often put up against the loan. And we work, you know, we do what we call very relationship-based lending, right?
Sure.
So we're only going to lend to folks that we've got a really solid rapport with, like Farmer Pirates, right? Mm-hmm. So when Farmer Pirates went in this expansion mode to support the city program a couple of years ago, we got together and wrote a loan application for them and received some money through our Seed Commons loan fund to help them buy a new truck that they needed. And
okay.
We just actually came back around and are helping them buy some more trucks and equipment this year, which is really exciting. And that only comes through those, you know, those close relationships. And so it's, you got to create new structures to do it. And then all of a sudden it seems just as possible as it didn't before.
Right.
You know,
it sounds like imagination though is a big part of this,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, how about for you? Was it, like you said, Terry, you're intrinsically a cooperative individual. It's a nice mm-hmm. way to describe somebody. I'd love to have that on my tombstone, I think. But at the same time, though, it must have taken a certain level of imagination to say that this could work.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can take credit for all of that because,
sure.
you know, like I said, when I first... you know, had my foray into living at the Nickel City Housing Cooperative.
Right.
That is the thing, you know, somebody else had imagination to create that.
Yep.
And then I was, you know, obviously open enough to put myself into that sort of situation.
Well, then do you see other businesses though, where you say that could be a co-op? Do you see that? Is that something that strikes you, or are you not that evangelical about it just yet?
I mean, yep. That would be probably more Andrew's
territory. I'm sure he does.
I'm so bogged down. I mean, I think most businesses could probably be cooperatives.
Yeah.
I did just recently have a conversation with someone. Every so often, Cooperation Buffalo puts on these mixers mm-hmm. where we can just meet up with other worker cooperative or cooperative members and just kind of talk about how things are going. And there happened to be these two people there that had nothing to do with cooperatives. It was at a local bar.
Yeah.
And so they were like, well, what is this? And I started talking to him about cooperatives. And he was a member of a very active union. And he was seeing a lot of parallels. So their union organizes to make sure that they're representing the workers and the workers' rights. And I was saying, well, that's kind of already built into what a worker cooperative is.
True.
Like, I don't even know if a union would be necessary in a worker cooperative because you're all already advocating for yourself. So it was interesting to see kind of how these practices are happening in other ways mm-hmm. in other businesses. But yeah. That was interesting.
We're coming down to our last minute here then, Andrew. And we've had a nice conversation. We've explored co-ops in a lot of different levels here. But at the same time, I'm sure there are people who are listening today or having all sorts of questions that are much more personal and focused than mine. But what's the best way for people to move forward if they want to know more?
I mean, there's information about cooperatives everywhere. I don't hold that intellectual property myself either.
Right.
But I will say we have a bunch of resources on our website, cooperationbuffalo.org. We are open to anyone reaching out to us who wants to chat, who wants to sit down and discuss a business idea, whether it's a startup or if it's an existing business like Farmer Pirates that is interested in taking some steps to maybe sell the business to the workers. That's also something that we can coach through the process as well.
And I'm just also being someone who likes to read. Is there literature that might outline this or kind of bring some depth to it that might be worth exploring?
There's a lot. We actually have a whole lending library in our office.
Of course,
so if you
go
to our website, of course we do, right? We share everything, right? So cooperationbuffalo.org, you'll see the lending library in our learning section, and you'll see a whole treasure trove of books that you could borrow from us if you want to. One, just because it's an element we didn't really bring into this conversation, is like there's a really incredible book called Collective Courage that by Dr. Jessica Gordon Nemhard, which goes through the entire history of African-American cooperation all the way back to slave times and then through Reconstruction and civil rights movement. It's a really important aspect that like this type of business structure, this type of way of running an economy, a lot of folks do because they don't have any other options. And this is what they have to do for themselves.
Wow, so much to talk about, so much to explore. And I do encourage everybody to find out more. Andrew Del Monte, thanks for being with us today. And welcome back to What's Next. And Tara Dumas, Farmer Pirates. Oh, what a pleasure. And then by the next time I see you, I'll be able to actually pronounce the name of your company. I'm looking forward to that. Tara,
okay.
Congratulations on your work, and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah,
What's
thank
Next?
You.
This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members. And from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.